Stand by for action.
Gamer's Haven Special Edition.
This is Ethan with the Gamer's Haven podcast, and I had the benefit of sitting down with my co-host Nathan to talk with the guys local around here called Secret Skeleton Miniatures. They're a local miniatures company that's just starting up, and they've got a selection of minis that they're going to be getting out there very, very soon, as they got some master molds in right after we did this interview. And they're one of the sponsors of CantCon, and are going to be one of the people that will have a vendor table there. So we sat down with them and wanted to sort of pick their brains about miniatures gaming and what got them into this, and sort of see basically what was going on. So and sit back and enjoy this interview. This podcast is brought to you by FRP Games, an online retailer specializing in all kinds of gaming products. Please visit www.forplenetwork.com in order to gain access to thousands of unique items available only at FRP Games.
This is the Forple Network.
This is Ethan with the Gamer's Haven podcast, and I'm here to tell you about CantCon. For those of us who CantCon, there's CantCon. CantCon will be held at the Johnson County Community College Regnier Center in Overland Park, Kansas, in the Capitol Federal Conference Room on July 9th through the 11th between 8 a.m. and 10 p.m. There will be RPG events, board game events, card game events, miniatures games, as well as open gaming tables for impromptu sessions. Pre-registration is open currently, and if you pre-register, you'll receive an additional chance to win swag at CantCon. We have over $2,500 worth of prizes to give away over the course of the convention, and we hope to give it all away. In addition, if you pre-register, you can get a 3-day pass for only $25. If you're only interested in coming one day at a time, you can for only $10 a day. There will be registration available at the door, but you'll have less of a chance to win free prizes that way. Join us at Johnson County Community College for CantCon on July 9th through the 11th, from beginning at 8 a.m. daily. Visit www.cantcon.com for more information. Well, this is Ethan with the Gamer's Haven podcast, and I am joined for the first time ever with Nathan, who's shoving food into his mouth. Yes. And we are here with local miniatures company owners. You guys are the owners?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Of Secret Skeleton Miniatures, right?
That's correct.
Yes.
Well, if you guys could introduce yourselves, please.
My name is Wes Herbst. I'm the president.
And my name is Jay Simpson, and I am the treasurer.
Excellent. And of course, we sort of stumbled upon you guys as a local miniature. You're really you do miniatures design, or you just you said you contract it out and then you distribute, or what is it that Secret Skeleton does?
What we do is we design the miniatures. We pay a sculptor to sculpt the miniature, and then we source the production of them to another company still, and then they return them to us for distribution.
Is this an efficient method of creating miniatures, or is it just the easiest way to do it due to the fact of constraints of space and production capabilities?
I think it's fairly efficient, considering that while I would love to have the talent required to sculpt, I don't. if we had the talent to make the sculpts ourselves, we would be more. It would be the only way it would make it more efficient. Currently, under the current model.
Yeah. But you contract out for the sculpting, which is a commonplace thing in the field of miniature making.
Relatively, yeah.
And then once you receive the sculptures, then you send them off to have molds made for the miniatures. Is that
they give to us what's called a green.
Mm-hmm.
It's made of epoxy. It's a Tom Meyer pioneered method, and who we use is Ironwood Metals, formerly Ralph Hartha.
Okay.
And we send them to them. They make a mold of it, to produce master casts, which are the highest, best quality you're ever going to get, and those go in the safe deposit box. And then you spend this one a finite amount of times to produce multiples of your master, and then you use each one of those to make production molds. So you'll have like a master mold of like one of 10 figures, mm-hmm. and then you'll have a production mold, which will have 10 of one figure.
Okay.
And then you use the production molds ad infinitum to produce blister packs.
Until the mold wears to the point where mm-hmm. where you need to replace it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a really interesting process. When Wesley came to me, it's been almost a year now when we first started talking about doing this. He came to me and, we were just sitting around one night, 3 o'clock in the morning like we do, just talking about, how mm-hmm. we would be great game store owners or something, in that regard. Thankfully, we didn't go that route. And, he just got to looking into it, and Wesley has this natural knack for being able to, if it's on the internet, he can find it. And he figured the process out, and we got to looking at it and how, unexpectedly cheap and reasonable it would be to, get it up and going. So we went ahead and made a run at it, and that's why we're here now.
Yeah, it's time-consuming, but it's surprisingly simple what really goes into it. And above all else, we had a mission statement, so I'm really trying to apply our products to a niche market anyway. I'm not trying to, change the world or make a dent on this, but at least I can make minis that pretty much nobody else does.
So you guys actually get the master casts, you get the molds, and you actually make the miniatures locally here, right?
No.
You have them produced off-site as well?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're basically middlemen for the most part. We're just pulling it all together. I mean, one of the things that we have that brings this all together is in my alternate identity, I'm a small business consultant. That's, mm-hmm. The acumen there. And just getting the money and the business plan and the relationships in place, is just a combination of talent. Wesley's all about relationships. He's all about, meeting people and just, networking and pulling it all together. It's just kind of a confluence of events, really.
Yeah, I figure, there's a reason why there's not, every sculptor doesn't have their own miniatures company, because some people just don't dig that. Especially dealing with gamers is a field unto itself.
Mm-hmm. We are finically lot.
Yeah. Yeah, we are. Yeah.
So we design and distribute, and we do have a pretty clear mission statement as to what we're trying to produce.
Cool. I mean, basically what it boils down to is we wanted miniatures that just weren't being made. That's ultimately mm-hmm. how it started is, how cool would it be if we had X, And he went to looking into it, and I think what it even started was like, I wonder what it would cost just to hire a sculptor to make this miniature
for
us.
That was the point. The initial thing is I wanted some really good Sawagan or Sea Devils, like mm-hmm. first edition style, because I was wanting to run a Sinister Secret of Salt Marsh and the two adventures after it. And I got to looking around, and I found I was kind of having to settle for what looked like it. And then I stumbled across sculptors, and I was like, why don't I just pay somebody to do it? And mm-hmm. then I realized that it is fairly expensive. Therefore, if I want the miniatures that I desire, I have to find a way to pay for them, which is in turn selling them.
Right.
So
I found myself sort of in the same boat when I was looking for Bullywugs. So
we make those, by the way.
Yeah, we saw them.
Yes, I figured this out after I need them.
Yeah, and that's usually how it goes.
It's like, man.
And it's really the love of purity and the quest for Sawagan that started all this, because we wanted Sawagan that looked more like
AD&D Sawagan out of the 77.
Like the devilfish guy.
Yeah, more like the
Warcraft Murlocs.
Yeah, the creature of the Black Lagoon looking guy, more than deep ones.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
so that's actually the theme, is the retro look for monsters.
Mm-hmm.
Two other points is continuity. They match each other in size.
Yeah, pureness of scale.
And we are scaling them to the 1-inch battle maps. So, the broad distribution of battle maps is the 1-inch square equals 5 feet of distance. So we have basically made our miniatures so 5 millimeters equals 1 foot of height.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, if you're going to have, a 9-foot tall ogre, he'll be 45 millimeters tall. So he'll match your battle map.
And he'll look
That's not something
huge.
You really think about looking at minis, though, but, you don't see that too often.
They used to do it a lot with the old ones, correct?
Yeah.
Because the halflings used to be absolutely tiny.
Yeah, they should be pretty small guys. They're like 15, 18 millimeters tall.
Yeah, now they're pretty much the same size as the standard 20s.
Yeah, the trending over the years has been for miniatures to get bigger and taller, and I don't know what drives at it, whether it's an easiness of, you know, makes them easier to paint, or if they can throw more doodads on them and armor made out of belts and pockets or whatever it is, you know. But Wesley is definitely, he's more of a purist than I am in regards to scale and things like that, but in my own personal game. But I have to admit, it looks pretty nice. I mean, there's something satisfying when you look down at your game board and everything matches, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Like, for instance, I did a drow line, and drow are 5 feet tall. As per my specific reference for this is Vault of the Drow, the adventure. And so my drow is 25 millimeters tall. And he's pretty sharp looking, though. I don't know if you've seen him.
I don't think I've seen that one yet.
I probably have.
All of our greens are on the Facebook site. Most of our humans are probably going to be in the area of 28 to 30 millimeters tall. You know,
so 5.5 to 6 foot tall.
Exactly. We're probably not going to do PC types until next year.
That makes sense.
The one human figure we have is it's called the Demon Witch, and
that one I have seen.
Okay, I don't know if you're aware. You're familiar with CannonFire.com. Well, me and Jay are both Greyhawk junkies. And Cannonfire is a big Greyhawk forum, and I did a poll last year to see which I would like to make a miniature inspired by a popular Greyhawk personality. And so the Demon Witch miniature is inspired by the seductress form of Yggwilth,
okay,
a Greyhawk personality. And the seductress Yggwilth won pretty much unanimously on the poll selectee, so... I mean, there wasn't even, like, one that was close.
Really?
So, well, you know, Seductress Gamer.
Yeah. Typical idea of a gamer.
Yeah, and with Seductress, we went for more of a traditionally more classical, attractive woman as opposed to just the tramp.
The topless tramp.
Yeah, the S&M slut.
Yeah, some people have mentioned, you know, like, she should look more evil, but... If she's trying to seduce somebody,
what good is looking like if she's evil? If she's trying to seduce someone,
exactly.
If there's a hint that there's something going on, people,
although to be fair,
subconsciously will catch it.
The spell book that the figure carries is pretty heinous looking.
Yeah, that's a dark looking, you know, flesh bound tome. My artist friend who drew
But if you're paying attention to the tome, there's something wrong there.
Yeah.
Low cut blouse, big tome.
She was carrying a book. What?
Oh. Curiously enough,
her eyes were green.
Yeah, my friend Damascus, who drew the concept art for, based her off of Charisma Carpenter.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
I never would have caught that unless you actually mentioned that.
Well, he's a Buffy. Yeah.
I'm actually looking at it.
He worships Buffy the Vampire Slayer
right now. Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, once somebody tells you that, if you look at it, you can see it. Damascus is an amazing artist, and he is a genuinely amazing artist, and the sculptor being able to translate Damascus's drawings into that dimension the way he did is just fantastic.
Yeah, Patrick Heath said he wanted to do that one kind of one-one, but he's not capable of the exact... I mean, most sculptors aren't, but the slightly more exaggerated proportions of the miniature do match the rest of the line better.
Right. And you guys that actually have a green of that one?
Yeah. Well, all the greens are at Ironwood now, but we should be receiving our master copies tomorrow by FedEx. Nice.
So when will you actually have production on the miniatures for sale?
Tomorrow we are going to look at all the masters, and if they're all golden, I'll call Michael Noe, the owner of Ironwind, and tell him to go ahead and push through a production run.
How much does a standard production run consist of?
You know, that depends. I believe we're probably going to do 30 to 50 packs of four different minis. We're not going to release everything at once. We want to stagger our releases so as to keep, you know, a monthly present, something out every month. Because the way I want to do sales is I don't want to do, like, you know, 20 miniatures every 4 or 5 months. I just don't think a lot of gamers, well, customers in general, have that kind of money to drop.
No, they don't have that much cash flow.
Yeah, one or two guys a month is what I want to do.
We figure we're going to be getting a lot of a repeat business, and a lot of the same people are going to be coming back for more, and we don't want to drain their pockets dry. Like I said, I mean, the main motivator here is to just get this, you know, get some miniatures on the table that we want. And so we figure that anybody that's going to be attracted to them initially, like we are, they're not going to want to buy, you know, 20 miniatures in one blow. So we'll put out two or three a month so that they can, you know, we can just...
That being said, I agree with you on that. One thing I would like to see is, like, if you guys do, like, you know, typical monsters like orcs, goblins, kobolds, things like that, doing, like, big runs of those, because it never fails You'll need like 30 kobolds for something, and you can't find 30 kobolds to save your life.
30 unique ones, you'll have to have
when
five.
When we're designing our primary...
I don't really care if they're the same. The thing is, it's just finding them, period.
Yeah, oh, yeah, I see what you're saying.
Actually, our primary focus is humanoids that PCs can slaughter and be slaughtered by.
Sure.
And so we're going to release them one per pack at a time, but once we start getting a few of them, we're probably going to do three packs or perhaps, you know, a box set of them at some point.
Okay.
I have commissioned, like, the Sea Devils. The Sea Devils are the first three I want to release because they're the first ones I commissioned, and that's sort of a deal.
Mm-hmm.
I want to get those guys out, and there's a Warhound I had designed based off the dogs from Dragon Age.
Yes, the Mabaris.
Yeah.
And the Mabari Warhound. So I pretty much made a Mabari Warhound.
And you guys have greens of those on here, too.
Mm-hmm.
I just was looking
at them. I call them Warhound of the Northland
because,
you know, Ferelden's all Northlandy.
Yeah.
Great game.
Addictive.
Yeah, Jason Weeb is going to do our Bolly Wugs.
I've got a character who has a dog, and I went everywhere looking for one. So.
For Jayco, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, that's exactly why I have one, because I bought the box set from, was it Green Ronin who did that?
For Dragon Age, yes.
Yes, and I bought the box set, and I was like, well, I know I'm going to want one of these, so let's just get one.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, he was actually pretty inexpensive for many, but it's cool.
So do you guys base a little bit of what you are going to do with Secret Skeleton Games, miniatures-wise, on what you yourselves want?
Well, yeah.
Oh, totally.
Absolutely.
Well, excellent.
The largest majority is going to be our Fiends of Fantasy, which is our humanoids. Gene Van Horn is going to do a line of Drow, and that's starting with, like, Drow Warriors, and we're going to get Drow Priestesses. You know, down to an Eclavdra lookalike, who is the big bad guy, Drow chick, and then probably a big freaking spider demon queen, Lolth, you know.
Should probably say at this point that none of this is meant as a challenge to anybody's particular trademark or anything. These are merely inspirations and homages, as it were.
Yeah.
Of course.
Sure.
And let's see. Jason Weeb is doing our Bullywugs. He's basically doing a big theme of ours is interchangeable arms and stuff, so you can buy multiple figures and mix them around so they're different.
Good customization.
And he's like doing this like pile of build it yourself frogmen.
Nice.
Yeah, we're really excited to see the frogmen. I mean, well, ultimately the goal there is for when you want to do 30 kobolds, you'll be able to buy
30 custom kobolds.
Exactly. You could buy three packs of kobolds or whatever.
Get nine different guys.
And have nine different guys.
That would be very nice.
Jason Weaver's also building our Boule, who is to scale.
Ooh.
He's going to be a big thing, you know.
Yeah, I definitely want to know when that one comes out.
He's working on that one.
That would give me an excuse to put a Boule in the game.
Land sharks are one of my favorite monsters to throw at people.
And we're looking... You know, we want something that can be done in more of an action pose. I mean, what little has been done on the Boule market, so to speak. Yeah. If there is such a thing as a Boule market.
The only one I've ever seen.
It's one of those niche things.
Yeah. Yeah. They're just kind of sitting there on four stumpy legs just with a
grin crust
on its face.
Yeah. That does not look like it would inspire terror.
We're also gonna have a little Boule scale shield put in there, too, he's going to do. So if you have a mini...
Because if you remember in the original Monster Hunter,
you could harvest scales from it and
make a shield. So we're going to throw a shield in there. So that, you know, with the idea being...
So with the idea of even customizing your PC mini...
You bet,
Like if we do bigger guys like that, I'm going to try and get little bits, you know.
Treasure bits.
Yeah. Tim Prowl, he's doing our Undead. He's done one skeleton, which is great. And I asked him to be the coolest looking skeleton ever. And he's a pretty cool looking skeleton, I'll have to say that.
Yeah, that's the one that's on the website, right?
Yeah.
That was the one that reminds me of, like, the Sinbad and
that's what we were going for.
The Seven Voyages of Sinbad.
I looked at it, and the first thing that popped in my head was Jason and the Argonauts.
Yeah,
that's awesome. Yeah. I'm glad to hear that. That's really what we were trying to go for there.
I had never seen Jason and the Argonauts. I'd just seen Seven Voyages of Sinbad. I've seen it now. I had not seen it up to that point.
You need to watch Golden Voyage of Sinbad. Tom Baker's in that.
Yeah, I've seen that one.
Yeah.
But I actually own the Seven Voyages of Sinbad on Blu-ray, and we were just watching the other day, and I was sitting there and got to the skeleton fight. I'm like, "There's the mini from the website," because it's like he recycled the same model.
At some point, you know, there's definitely a unihorned Cyclops in the future.
Uh-huh. And,
you know, we're wanting to do some stuff like that.
Yeah, classics, classic monsters would be an awesome one.
That's really what we're wanting to do.
Like Swamp Man, make it kind of look something a little bit like.
Shambling Mount? What is it? Trying to think what else. We have a vintage sci-fi line I call Secret Space Opera.
Oh, yeah? Cool.
And the first set for that are Space Fleet officers. And there's a picture of them up there. I commissioned Michael Brower of Reaper fame to do them. And that's
in your greens?
No, it'll be in concept art, because they're. I told him to take his time with them, because I'm not going to focus on the line anytime soon.
Sure.
But basically, the pack is going to be three bodies in three poses, and then there's going to be a blister, a little sprue of six heads.
So you can customize the heads however you like.
And there are going to be three options for right hand and three options for left hand. There's like an open hand, there's one with a communicator, and one with a phased-like weapon.
Phased-like weapon.
And then there are heads.
So if you wanted to paint them with blue or gold or even red shirts.
Yeah. And there is a head that may be reminiscent of a Vulcan, one that may be reminiscent of an Andorian.
Space elf.
And one that may be reminiscent of a Kathian.
I don't know Star Trek that well.
No.
But I know Ethan does.
They're vintage, though. They're like the... Specifically, like, I like the FASA Star Trek game.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, I remember that.
And so, yeah. So that's what I'm trying to do, is you buy, one pack and you got...
Several miniatures. Several options that you can do.
What kind of backgrounds, gaming-wise, do you guys come from? What did you guys start with when you started gaming?
Well, he started me, so I guess he can fill that in better.
Okay. Well, I'm the older brother. My introduction to gaming was actually through my father. When I was in second and third grade, he had me playing Risk, and we were coming up with custom rules for Monopoly, and when our pieces would land on the same thing, we would dice off to have fights and things like that. And then I guess it was in 81 or 82, I got introduced to just D&D. And that's all I knew it as, by one of the neighbor kids. And his dad actually was a gamer and ran his game every Friday night. So I'd always arrange to try to stay over at his house on those nights and just kind of watch. And it was a very natural transition. And then from there, I came up pretty mainstream as far as role-playing games. D&D has always been my first love. But, a little bit of wargaming. There was the D&D game at Boy Scout camp. I think I was 10 when I got my first box set and tried to run my own games. And every villain was either War Duke or War Dog or War Drake or War whatever. They were all...
Right.
And then, I guess, the first time I killed one of Wesley's PCs was in 86 or 87. I believe it was wasn't it a giant owl?
It was a giant owl.
I made him cry. To be fair, he was in first grade.
I flipped it off and it killed me.
Yeah, and then we didn't play together again for a while. and then, like anybody else, just the standard stable of nerd upbringing, sci-fi movies and fantasy books and Piers Anthony and the whole nine yards.
Yeah, I had to grow up a closet gamer because...
Definitely closet. I was definitely a closet gamer for a long time.
Because Mom didn't dig that. We could play a game called Satan Eats Your Children and, throws them off of ledges and into cook pots. But if it's called Dungeons & Dragons, no, it's evil.
I don't know if it's...
I dealt with the same thing growing up.
Fantastic, sir.
I remember a funny anecdote. I remember I was in probably seventh grade and I just discovered Axis and Allies. And I requested... that for my birthday or something like that, and the only concern was, well, is that like D&D?
Ooh.
And I'm like,
don't
no.
You hate that question?
No. Yeah, and of course I've spent my time behind the register at various game stores here in town, and so I've been the game, and I worked for a company that tried its hand at doing some game design and was just horribly mismanaged, and it didn't turn out favorably. So like most of them, I suspect, and it's just. I've been in every aspect of the industry practically at this point, especially now that we're doing miniatures.
Now, with any luck, you guys said your lines will actually start shipping to you in the next couple weeks. And then from there, I take it the turnaround is going to be just to package them and then turn them out to for sale.
Yeah, it's direct to website, direct from website.
Okay,
sales.
So your method of distribution is direct from website.
And you guys will have... a website, Secret Skeleton Miniatures website.
We use an eCreator store because I have absolutely zero ability to make a website.
Well, that's why you hire someone like Ethan.
Yeah, we're using an eCreator store. I mean, we're on a shoestring budget right now, so we're going to be doing the eCreator store right now for a while. And then as things develop, we'll want to have our own website and we'll do...
And you guys will be at CantCon.
Absolutely.
Selling some stuff. I know we'll be buying some stuff at CantCon.
Yeah, I'm going to put some discount goodies there.
Yeah, we hope to have a everything ready and good to go by then. And
I know it's a lot of people are very interested in seeing what you guys have and want to pick some stuff up just based on what's on your Facebook page. So
hope they like the late 70s version of D&D because that's kind of the image we're going for.
Yeah. We've got, I want to say, 6 AD&D games running at CanCon.
That's playing.
We've got some old school gamers coming down. So we actually have no 4th edition running. We have some AD&D. Hey, I love 4th ed. So
me, not so much.
Him, he hates it. But
no, I don't hate it. I just think it'll be much better after they come up with the rules revisions.
I actually run a basic game.
There's some stuff I have problems with.
Our general consensus here is who cares, just game.
Yeah.
I don't care what edition you like, as long as you
There are a lot of aspects of 4th Ed that I really like. I like the max hit points thing. I like the condensed skills. But some of the other problems, I don't like the fact that it seems like, like skill sets. It's like, oh, I am a warrior. Warrior is a tank. It's like, okay, if this person over here plays the same skill set role, this person's a defender, this person's a defender. This person over here, this is a defender. His skills might be named completely different, but they do basically the same thing as what the fighters does. It's like MMOs in that respect, that it's like you may be playing a different class, but it essentially does the exact same thing.
See, with me, less that's on a character sheet, the better.
Yeah.
As far as the two of us go, I mean...
But powers? Cool idea.
Our gaming styles, I really don't think could be any more different.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's...
Well, you did kill his character, right?
Yeah.
I'd
want to be as different from you as possible, too, if you killed my character.
I don't be like him, he killed my character.
That was like 22 years ago, but I still harbor a grudge.
You still think about it.
Yeah, but you're not bitter.
Yeah. No, I run a weekly Pathfinder game that is a derivative of my old 3.5 game.
That's exactly what we're doing
right
now.
Of my 3.0 game, which I've been running the same campaign world since 1986.
Mm-hmm.
My first 3.0 campaign, I started in November of 2000, and I just wrapped it up, I think, in the winter of 2006. And
we're on the same one. I've been running it since 2004, and it's
we had a long hiatus.
Yeah, we did have a long hiatus. We played different games for like 2 years.
Sure.
But we're finally back to it. But
depending on your definition of campaign, I guess you could say I've been running the same campaign for 15 or 20 years.
Yeah, exactly.
It just depends on your definition. I have a canonical list of what has happened and. You know, whereas Wesley
that
runs
sounds vaguely familiar.
Wesley runs these great Castles and Crusades games that are just they're a blast, and I could never run the games that I play when I play Wesley's games.
At CanCon, we're going to have Black Blade Publishing is going to be there.
Yeah, I know Alan.
I've known Alan quite well.
He's not going to be there.
John's going to be there.
Yeah.
And he's running a bunch of AD&D stuff.
Yeah, the Swords and Wizardry, which is a really cool system.
Mm-hmm. So there's going to be tons of old-school D&D stuff.
Yeah,
there,
cool.
Sure, we're trying to get some other company, Tabletop Adventures, to come down. So.
Hmm. Tabletop Adventures?
Mm-hmm. They're out of Lincoln, Nebraska.
Well, that's interesting. When you say tabletop, I immediately think tabletop game and hobby.
Oh, yes. Back to your miniatures games, of course. Your miniatures stuff. Where is it, if you could sort of let us know, where is it you start with a design when you start saying, well, we want to have this miniature? I think a lot of people aren't really familiar with where you start with.
Where I start specifically is I figure out what I want to do.
Right.
And, of course, it's obviously you want to do drow or drow, however you want to pronounce it. I say drow. I don't care if that's right or wrong.
Who cares? It doesn't matter.
What I do is I get as much of the reference art for it as possible, and I immediately weed out what I don't like. Mm-hmm. And then I use the written descriptions from the same material. So like Vault of the Drow. Mm-hmm. I didn't base any of the design off of the Drow pictures. I just the way they were described in the book. And with the Soega in the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Is from the 1977 AD&D Monster Manual. I just read about their description. And then U3, The Final Enemy, the module by Don Turnbull, in there as well. And it's put together some Creature of the Black Lagoon looking guys that they're pretty AD&D's away.
Nice.
So once we have the initial concept, the written description, if you will, once we have that, we pass that along to the sheet artist who does a drawing of it. And we generate our own, it's all original artwork, that way there's no, infringement or anything like that, based on the written description, and quite a bit of conversations. And then, at that point, once we get on a design that we like, we pass that off to a sculptor, I guess.
Well, right? We own all the concept art we do ourselves, or we have drawn, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not based off of any, like, a derived image from another property holder. It's work we produce. Either my wife draws it or Damascus draws it or I draw it.
Mm-hmm.
Or Martin Siesto. He's got designed our blister pack. Did a great job. First time he's ever done it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's on your Facebook. It looks great.
Yeah, I was astounded actually with how much. He's a terrific artist. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Martin's great. He's got a very first edition style. I mean, he knew Gary. He's got that old school feel to him. I think he's a big fan of what's the Hackmaster. Yeah, that's his current game of choice. He was telling me. But it's a cool system.
Fiends of Fantasy.
So yeah, after you pass it off to Sculptor, they obviously sculpt it,
mm-hmm.
and
they send the green to you, correct?
Yes, they send it to me, and then we clear it.
You verify whether the green is what you're looking for or not. Mm-hmm. Now, if the green doesn't fit the description or what you hope to actually achieve for the miniature, what do? Do you send the green back and they make modifications to it, or do they start over from scratch?
Well, I don't know how they did it before email, but how we do it is they send us in-stage pictures.
Okay.
So
you can make modifications while they're doing it.
During the process, yeah.
Particularly, if you look at the different greens for the Warhound, you'll see the first Warhound he sent me had this weird-looking face, and I had them edit that to more of a Mastiff.
Yeah, I can see that.
It's not really a very action-y pose, but for what I paid for it, I'm pretty happy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's a giant Warhound. Everybody knows it's going to kick some ass.
He's
it doesn't
a
have
big
to be doing...
dog, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah.
He's like 4 feet at the shoulder big. He's a big dog.
Yeah, they describe mm-hmm. the Mabari as being huge.
Yeah, but...
Mabari Warhounds, so... I do like your guys' blister pack. I just actually found the picture for that. That is very classic, old school.
Well, of course,
style.
link to you guys off the site. Of course.
That'd be great.
The show notes. The show notes.
Yeah, all of this art that we're talking about, all the pictures. Is there anything that we haven't put on the Facebook yet?
No. Every soon as we get it done, it goes up there.
Yeah.
It's a bummer to hear about the Minotaur model.
Yeah, and we hope that there will be a reversal there. I think it's just. He was getting the original artist Patrick was just getting fed up with the intricacies, shall we say, of international mail, and I think he's going to try a different route. So, you know, ultimately, I mean, hopefully he can get it produced one way or the other. And you know, if he runs into some roadblocks and wants to come back to us, I mean, we're still more than happy to work with him, and we can just find another way to do it.
There's got to be some way of actually going through the, you know, the whatever communication channels that are need to with the, what is it, the Argentinian government, right?
He's Argentinian descent, but he's in Brazil.
Is it Brazil? I don't remember.
So, Rio de Janeiro, yeah.
Oh, that's right.
Rio would be Brazil.
Yeah.
There's got to be some communication channel you can go through to find out what needs to be done to get everything taken care of so that he can, you know, do export work. I'm sure there's a requirement for it somewhere.
I'm sure. And
I read up on it, and their government taxes anything that's mailed to or from there.
Oh, yeah. That's common. It's everywhere else in the world. You're taxed on things that come, that leave or come in. I mean... I've been selling a bunch of old computer stuff for a friend of mine, and I asked someone once. They asked, "Hey, can you send it? Can you mark it as gift on the customs declaration form?" Yeah. I'm like, "Well, sure, but why?" He goes, "Well," he says, "how much did I pay for that?" I said, "Well, you know, X amount of dollars." He says, "I will pay approximately 40% of that price in tariff costs alone when it gets to me."
Yeah,
out of my pocket. He says, "And probably 25% of that goes right into that custom official's pocket."
Wow,
all for graft. He says, "If you mark it as gift." They take considerably less because then they feel bad if they try to extort you. That wasn't in you know a third world country. That was in Europe, and
mm-hmm.
in a very large country. And I don't really want to go into the details of it because you know
I dig.
No, I've,
yeah,
I've ran
that
into
thing
that.
Is, yeah, it's nasty.
The biggest thing with Patrick though is that the Baphomet really wasn't really it, you know thematically what we were looking for, but I really just wanted to help the guy out. We weren't going to make much on it, but I just wanted to you know make.
Yeah.
And the point is, we just wanted the miniature available.
That thing, yeah. I thought
it was a stepping stone for a Tarrasque.
I saw it. And
I just wanted a Tarrasque, and he could do it.
I was very impressed. I didn't realize the scale of it. Because when I saw it, I thought it was just a Minotaur.
It's supposed to be Baphomet based off a Wayne Reynolds picture. It's like 6 inches tall.
Yeah, I just looked at it and was like, that would be an awesome replacement for the Warhammer Minotaur.
Yeah.
Because,
yeah.
I mean, come on. Yeah. $33 for one plastic mini?
Tell me about it. Thank you. Yeah, I've got it. In the current game I'm running, a lot of the people that play in my games are convinced that there are bugs planted in my house, because what happens in my campaign tends to be it'll pop up on the... It'll start showing up in the gaming industry thematically, like there's this some kind of, you know, zeitgeist going around where all the gamers are on the same pulse. So, and we had just started a new campaign, and one of the PCs is playing. He's a priest of Baphomet, and of course, when that sculpt came up, we're like, oh my god, what perfect timing! We have to have that now. And of course, I've had to resort to getting the $33 plastic miniatures from
for the Doom Bowl, and they're nice plastic models.
Oh, they're great,
but I just don't understand the cost on them. I look at it and go, okay, I build an airplane that's a foot long by 18 inches wide with the wingspan, and I don't spend $20, and that plastic's thicker than a lot of the plastic on the Warhammer minis. Yeah. Why am I paying so much?
There must be some kind of
the import fees have to be outrageous.
They must be terrific.
Actually, if you it's funny because if you go to the Games Workshop's UK site, you take the price in pounds and convert it to the price in dollars, it's usually like $1 or $2 less than what it... I mean, they're just like randomly adding on $1 or $2.
Well, yeah, the thing is the average in UK, and honestly, I don't blame them if this is the reason why they do it. The average for the UK is anything that's made in the United States gets converted from dollars directly to pounds. So it's like you buy a video card for your computer that costs $300 here, $299.
Mm-hmm.
They pay £299 for it in Europe, which is the equivalent of $385. So they're paying almost an extra $100 for the same thing that we got for $300. And so I'm not surprised to see it done the other way around when they ship stuff over to us. I can't really say I blame them. The iPad, I was looking at the pricing on the iPad. We pay, for the cheapest model of the iPad, we pay, what, $500?
Something like that,
The cheapest model of the iPad for them is the equivalent of $780.
Wow.
Pounds.
Well, the UK stores like charge the VAT to American customers, and
well, that's because they get charged for it whether they sell it in the United Kingdom or not. If they've sold the product, they get charged the value-added tax, and so they pass that on to the customers whether we're in the United States or not. And actually, what's interesting is we're like one of the only countries that doesn't have something like the VAT, the value-added tax. Everybody else from the world has something like that that they get charged. We don't. So, but yeah, no, it's crazy, and cost of living and everything over there is palaciously higher than it is here too.
UK sculptors are typically more expensive too, like to hire them. But like Tim Prow, he's as far as the rest of the sculptors went, he cost a lot, but that skeleton's pretty dang good.
Yeah, that skeleton is awesome. I'm looking at the multiple pictures.
Tim Prow is like the old Heartbreaker guy. Tim Prow and Kev Adams, they were like, you know, the original UK sculptors
and easy to work with.
Like Tom Meyer and Julie Guthrie, you know, the original US sculptors.
Mm-hmm.
They're like their UK equivalents.
That's
and
awesome.
Actually, Mark Evans, he's a cool guy. He's friends with Tim and Kev. He's doing pig faced orcs for us.
Awesome. Okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, nice.
Yep. They should be pretty cool. He showed me this picture of this really ugly hog he found. They're going to be all like creepy Legend of Zelda Ganon.
We're going to try to get as many variations of these as possible.
Necklace of elf ears.
Because whereas Wesley's big thing is in his game's scale, in my game, I'm more about, I like individual figs. I hate having to use the same fig
for the same multiple way monsters. I have a chaos army, you know, and I hate doing army paints because it's like, well, I've got, you know, 40 Chaos Warriors that look the same.
Uh-huh.
I try to paint them all at least differently, you know?
Yeah, my neurosis goes deep. For instance, I don't even play Warhammer 40K. I did play a long time ago, but I recently... I spent 2 or 3 years building a Tyranid army just so that I could have one.
The Tyranids are just awesome models.
And they're so fun to sculpt and play with and customize.
And dangerous.
Yeah, they're very sharp.
Yeah, they are.
I have the wounds on my
hands. He has the scar proof
as do I. And after I had this thing, I was like, well, now what? I don't play the game. So I just sold it on eBay. And I really wish I hadn't now, but I do this like once a year. I'll go through this garage sale type phase where I just sell off a bunch of my excess gaming stuff and
use it
to buy more gaming stuff.
More gaming
stuff. I hoard, so I'm really bad about that.
I used to be that way as well.
I have like long-term hoards, like 10 years, then I'll just dump everything.
Oh, no, I still have stuff that I've had since I was 6 years old.
Wow.
Shoved in boxes and places.
We move too often for that.
Yeah.
Oh, I moved a lot too, but I managed to keep keep all of it.
I think I was in 15 different elementary schools.
I wasn't in that many, but I was in a lot.
Was it military? I was just shiftless parents.
Where do you guys come from originally?
Originally, yeah.
kind of Missouri.
Missouri-ish.
Yeah, kind of.
The Missouri.
We've been in Alaska and Georgia. And
I guess technically, I don't know how you qualify where you're from. I guess if it's
I was born in DePere, Missouri in 1981. I have not been back since.
Yeah.
It's probably a good thing.
I was born in Provo, Utah. I've never been back since either. So.
Yeah, I was born in St. Charles. I've been back, but, you know, like I said, if it's based on how long you live somewhere, then I guess I'm from Lenexa.
The longest I have lived anywhere is where I live now. I've lived at Lenexa for 3 years.
Yeah.
That's the longest I've ever maintained single residence.
Yeah, the current house I'm in, I've lived in for 5 years, and it's the longest I've lived in any one location in my life.
One question for you real quick on the Mini Alliance. I know this is probably the one that everybody's been waiting for us to ask is, what is going to be the average price for the blister packs?
$3.99.
Yeah. That's it?
For most single figures, yeah. Like the Boulet will probably be more, but...
Well, yeah, he's also going to be like 10 times bigger, the size.
You know? All our humanoids, $3.99.
Wow, really?
We'd go less if I could.
Yeah, I mean, he would go less...
That's why you're the treasurer.
Exactly. Yeah. Because I actually do want to make enough money because I'm intrinsically lazy. I hate to work. And I would like to get enough to where I can just kind of do this...
As a regular thing.
Full-time-ish.
Yeah.
But I don't want to gouge the customers either because I hate it when I get gouged.
Well, now, the question is this. The average cost for a miniature now is like $6 for a single figure, and that's in a static pose.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think you guys could sell them for a little bit more?
Oh, absolutely.
We could. Buyers? I mean, I was expecting, you know, something more than what
you
we
see
taste.
That most with a lot of small miniatures companies.
Yeah.
You know, saying.
What I'm doing is pretty much standard, I guess, cost to retail. I mean, I'm charging a percentage of what it costs to make the mini.
We figure out the total cost of manufacturing from concept art all the way through to the final spin. We figure out how much it costs to make that. We've got a formula that we use, and then we apply a value markup that will pay for that cost and allow for enough profit
to be able to start a new one.
To basically pay for the next one in the row.
Yeah, and like for instance, like a lot of companies do, you know, tons of conversions. How we're going to do is we're going to do the prime example will be the Drow we have. Drow, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have two conversions done on him. Different faces, poses, equipment, and then we're going to do another basis. We're not going to like convert the same guy too many times.
Yeah, we're not using the same mannequin, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we'll have like 3 Drow male warriors, and then eventually, you know, there'll be a little blister pack of that guy, probably for $10-$11, with just the 3 of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the economy's in the crapper right now.
Of course.
So, and it's a niche market, and I know how I am in regards to how the economy shapes my gaming purchases, which is to say largely it doesn't. But at the same time, my wife is awesome. So I get away with more than a lot of the most average gamer does. And so we want to make a profit. We want to pay for more. We want to make money. But at the same time, we don't want to do it at the expense of our customer.
Yeah, you guys aren't gamers, or you guys aren't Games Workshop.
Yeah,
people
asked us to do T-shirts, and I want to do T-shirts, but I researched it, and like I research everything. Like I researched for 4 months nonstop just to get, you know, the stuff to do this company because I don't want to make little mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And unless I like personally buy the silk screen material to do the T-shirts myself, they're going to cost about $8 to $10 a piece. I think the least maybe is 6, and to even gain a profit, I have to sell a T-shirt, you know, like $20, and I don't want to be the douchebag selling T-shirts for $20. I just think that's fundamentally wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I understand that the viewpoint on that. Yeah, the thing is that any sort of clothing graphic design work stuff is just outrageously expensive, and it's done that way because the industry is set up in such a way as to make sure that only the people that can mass produce it can make a profit.
Yeah, it's just a standard, you know, T-shirt, $20.
The way if the past is anything to go off of, what will end up happening is at some point we will have a customer or another contact in the community at large that has the facilities to do T-shirts that will come to us and go, hey, let's trade product or something along those lines. And that's probably what we will do. And that's really what has allowed us to really achieve this low price point more than anything is the relationships that have been set up. And just, you know, Wesley's ability to just know everyone. and, you know, and we've got the really expensive side of things. We have the key people in place to save money where possible. So it's a little bit of luck.
I try to make friends with everybody. I've met some right turds doing this, but there's a lot of people who are really cool, and, you know, it's, I don't know, it's like, you know, the gaming world is small, regardless of how many people actually, and it's still small comparatively. I mean, like, compared to, like, I don't know, football fans.
Yeah.
And everybody eventually will get to know everybody, and then there's some people who are just universally known as, like, a turd.
Yeah, I can think of a couple people we know that are like that.
And I've come across a few of them. I mean, like, people just...
Without naming names.
Yeah. But above all else, you know, every bit of advice I get from anybody, I still take note of, and I don't use everything, but I still keep it, because I don't pretend I know everything. I'm not the kind of guy who, because I have something, I lord it over people. I just pretty much want to get along and give people cool minis. That's like the goal.
That's very exciting. I can't wait to see your guys' actual first run of minis when they actually come to figures.
Well, the big hang-up initially is the first two sculptors we got just took a bit. That's all there is to it.
Oh, yeah, it does take a little bit of time.
Well, and to their credit, they took a while, but at the same time, they gave us an incredibly good deal on the price they gave us, and with the understanding that they were going to take their time. And they took a huge gamble on us, because I can only imagine how often they've been approached by some
Yahoo office, you know,
some black t-shirt guy like myself going, hey, can you make my character fig?
Yeah.
You know, I'm
and then they get screwed over because I never get paid for it.
Yeah, and that's the exact deal. You know, in our business dealings, that's the first thing we do is we pay the bills.
And, you know, the first guy we had was Joe Brumby in the UK. He did our Sea Devils, and it was like 7 months, but he didn't ask for money until the end.
Wow.
And sculpting is his second profession. Mm-hmm. And he said it was going to be a bit, you know.
Yeah.
And
what's his primary profession?
He does, like, landscape modeling, and he's phenomenal. I mean, wow. he's like true mind. To life. Second is Jason Weeb. He's like a saint of miniatures.
Yeah, Jason Weeb has been a real blessing to our company.
Yeah, he did. We paid him for the one Bullywug. Or frog
that's
man,
the,
excuse
that's,
me.
That's the one with the axe emitter. Yeah, I love that model. Yeah.
That's the only one that's not going to have like multiple stuff to them.
See, that's fine. If I had had that one, I would have used it for Clark.
Yeah, we ended up getting a Bullywug follower.
I ran his group through Keep on the Shadowfell to expose them to 4th edition. And And I went and replaced all of the kobolds because I put it in my setting and I had to shuffle things.
Yeah.
And I replaced all the kobolds with Bullywugs.
Awesome,
as you should.
They were nasty.
Bullywugs are just disgusting and gross. Well, they end up capturing one and keeping it.
Sure.
Well, and we didn't keep it
the whole game. Yeah.
I didn't want to keep it. I wanted to kill it. But
one of them named it Clark.
There's always a Chewbacca of a group.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Every good. You gotta have Chewbacca.
The funny thing is, he is everyone. Everyone rolled horribly in that game.
Except for the
guy who rolled Clark. He like crit on things with javelins from 3 miles
away. Yeah.
Like
it was.
Alrighty then.
The person who played that, his name is Andre, and Andre would roll for himself. And it would just be horrible. I would roll for myself. It would just be horrible. Our dice did not like us for 4th Ed. And then Andre's like, and I roll for Clark. And it's a natural 20.
Yeah.
The guy that was running down the corridor going for the bell to set off the bell, to set off the alarm, he's like, dead.
Fuck.
Yeah. It was just incredible. And, yeah, I figure like that would have been awesome for it. But the thing is invariably, I'm sure everybody will want to.
Oh, and I hunted around for Bullywug and Frogman minis.
Well, not just that, but
the exact reason why we made one, is because I wanted Bullywugs for Danger on Dunwater.
Mm-hmm.
And chances are, if you run into that problem again, let us know. It may be even a problem that we ourselves are having, had, or are going to have. Because, like I said, I've been running the same campaign for years now, and I still run modules, sort of. And, you know, just like you do, you have to adapt them to your own set.
Yeah.
And, you know, I want minis for them, and I want them to match as much as possible. You know, the days of beholders being represented by Nilla wafers and bottle caps are over in my world.
Yeah.
I remember I used to play Champions, and we used little D6s all the time because you had tons of those.
You do realize that pretty much everybody's going to want to, aside from me, is going to want to go on and do the next module in that campaign arc, right?
At some point, probably. Yeah.
Just,
I got nothing.
Just in case you didn't realize
that. Keep on the Shadowfell?
Yeah.
Let's keep on the Shadowfell, yeah.
Those look pretty well written. I wish...
They're okay.
It's a standard
dungeon crawl for a bit. Yeah. So.
And it took a while of getting used to that, because all the rest of the games that we've played in are not dungeon crawls.
Ah.
And so suddenly it was like, I'm getting my ass handed to me left and right, and we go from one fight to the next. There's nothing else. I don't like this. Is this a system? And everyone goes, at the end of the system, after we finally got done with it and we killed the bag, I'm like, finally, we're done with that. And everyone goes, you do realize that was just a dungeon crawl. And I'm like, that explains why I hated it so much.
Yeah.
I'm sure the system in a standard setting will be nice. Yeah, and like, we're going to find that out.
I'm very excited because I'm going to do Dark Sun. Yeah. So I never, ever got to run Dark Sun ever.
I gave away all my Dark Sun stuff.
Until the new one came up, so.
Oh, man, yeah.
When I do a dungeon crawl, it's usually, I don't use monsters. I use, you know, the dark and claustrophobia and traps and hazards.
We're big terrain guys. You know, our first run at doing a miniatures company, like 2 years ago, we looked, or 3 years ago now, we looked seriously at mass-producing terrain.
And that's expensive work.
Yeah.
Shipping it is the bad part.
And it was shipping that ate us up, because I can, artistic expression is I can make terrain, and I'm actually pretty damn good at it.
Mm-hmm.
And I love doing it. I'm good at it. I love doing it. But at the end, there was no way. We figured out every way to do it, mass produce and everything. But at the end of the day, it was shipping that, you know, punched us in the pooper every time.
Yeah,
you know?
Because even the post office is ungodly expensive to ship.
And that was the cheapest option. You know, well, you know, speaking of shipping, you know, when we were having contract issues, mailing contracts to our friend down in Brazil, the reason why is because, what was it, $80?
70. It was like $72
to mail. For a letter.
Yeah,
you know,
and that's signed and tracked.
Yeah, so
unless you want to tape it to the back of a mule and
or a llama,
point it south and let it go.
I could probably set it out to sea.
Maybe it'll get there.
Get there faster.
Yeah,
yeah. It's kind of crazy how some of that stuff works. What was that? Chaosium puts on their website: all our products are shipped to the finest way possible, strapped to the back of a llama, and sent on their way through the Andes. But yeah,
sometimes that would work best.
Sometimes that seems to work better than using the standard lanes of shipping. It's
whatever
like you send something through UPS and it arrives in 15,000 pieces because they decided to kick it down the staircase because they were having a bad day. You send it through FedEx and it never ends up showing up because someone saw what the package was, opened it up, saw what was inside it, and decided they liked it and took it for themselves. You use the United States Postal Service and it may get there. It might have fallen off the plane while it was flying over the ocean, for all you know. And the thing is it's just like no matter what you do, there's always problems when it comes to shipping.
Be it
cost, the product actually getting there when it's supposed to get there, or if it gets there at all, if it gets there in the shape it's supposed to. I've run into every sort of problem you can think of when it comes to shipping. And it's just, it's nasty because some of these things, one of the things we shipped a full computer, had all the cards out, put them in a box, inside a box, in foam padding box. It got there. And it looked literally, the guy took pictures of the package, it looked like literally someone had taken a sledgehammer to the packing box.
Mm.
The whole computer was trashed. All the cards were snapped and broken. No way to fix that sort of thing. We're talking about things that are very difficult to find, one.
Mm-hmm.
Two are very expensive. And then, you know, three, they're heavy to ship. So we got, you know, charged an arm and a leg. And in the end, we had to refund this guy all his money because there was nothing we could do. It was trashed. That's the whole thing was ruined.
That's pretty ridiculous, yeah. We're pretty much going to do... We're going to ship things in the blister in a priority mail flat box.
That's a great way of doing it. $4.95 anywhere in the United States.
Yeah.
4 pounds.
And I can get...
And it's $13.95 to ship it, or $13.45 to ship it across the ocean.
Yeah, now if...
They can probably put maybe up to 8 packs in there. I don't know. I have to look. And if the customer wants to pay more, I mean, we'll get to a point where we'll have that option. But there's really no reason to. I mean, it'll get there eventually.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what you guys come out with. I'm really excited. I like the Bullywugs. The Bullywug, I should say. Let me close that.
Yeah, he's the only one that's not going to be, have the interchangeable parts, because ultimately, most of our stuff is going to have interchangeable stuff. Like, particularly when we get to doing PCs, super fantastic on that.
Yeah.
And kind of going back.
But you're going to need to for
players.
For PC.
Well, yeah. We're all about customizability, because that's one of our big things to do is, you know, like I said, I make terrain, and I'm also the guy, whenever somebody has a miniature, and they'll go to the store and they'll buy their miniature for the PC, I'm the guy they bring it to customize it and, you know, add a different shaped head or a new weapon or something like that. And for the really detailed work, Wesley takes over in his... He has an Asian wife, so she's supernaturally good at this stuff.
So the question I have to ask is, have you guys thought about doing this with your PC line, having like the standard body types and then doing like sets for heads? People basically match buy what they want?
Yeah.
That'll get
initially,
to what they'd like?
Well, initially we were going to, like if we do like human fighter, he's going to be, you know, a body pose, come with weapon assortments and like a head or two. But like say there's, you know, a human paladin and a human ranger that are male, the heads will be interchangeable with all of them. And at some point we may sell like a 10-pack of heads for human males. But so if like, you know, like elf male head probably won't fit very well in a human male head, because elves are significantly shorter than humans, and they're
also they're also different body build.
Yeah,
they're going to be a different
skeletal structure.
Yeah.
Well, if you look at our drow, he's got a conical friggin' AD&D elf head.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, all of our monster lines, like with the Boulet, one of the things we want to do is we want to throw in goodies with some of the bigger packs, so that
like some piles of gold, maybe a dead body.
Yeah, like a shield, and goodies. We're just calling them bits, treasure bits. You get something, and it may just be like, a pile of gold, or it may be a shield. Basically, if there's in the written description, in the classical written description of the monster, if there's a portion of that monster that can be harvested for use by your PC, if we can figure out a way to stick that in there with it, so that you get the miniature and then something to afterwards to customize your mini with, we'll do it.
Like that's really cool, because that brings up really neat things, like if you do full size dragon models, throwing in bodies, like male and female bodies of like, say, human and
a dragon hide armor,
dragon hide armor that people can put their little minions heads on and their arms on.
That was another point I was going to raise with the. With the PCs is, we'll start doing custom bits like that.
Yeah, because that'd be really cool to see. That's something that I don't think anybody else has done in the industry, have
another
they?
One, Phil at Tabletop suggested that if we do an Otyug, we do a, it's eye stalk out of a little pile of trash.
Just an eye stalk sticking up out of the trash.
Yeah, because that's where they hide out.
Yeah, or like with a griffin, you might get a griffin and then
like
an egg
cub or something,
or a baby. Come on, we love harvesting the griffins.
They make great pets.
Yeah, they're great for aerial
like mounts. A saddle or something.
It's like there's always a guy who wants to ride the baby pyrohydra.
I think that's happened in.
Can't just have a horse.
One of your games. No. Horses are so mundane. Mystical and mythical.
I have a paladin
mounts,
in this game rides a camel.
Yeah.
He's a
celestial camel now.
Yeah, he's a celestial
camel now. Like, I want to ride an axiomatic bat,
Okay. Done.
That would be really cool to see. a bat with a harness on it, the guy riding on the back of it.
Probably not going to do an axiomatic bat miniature, but...
Yeah, there's probably not a huge market for that.
I can't see there being a big market.
I don't know. I've seen some pretty uber niche miniatures out there, like something that... Who would ever buy more than one of, I can name a lot.
Yeah.
And of course, part of our business model is...
The problem with a lot of games, a lot of minis, is you run into those one-offs. It's like, well, I need an illithid pirate for this.
Well, if I need a... if I need a guy in a tri-corner hat with a bazooka wearing a fur cape,
There you go.
That's awesome. No, and that's part of our business model, too. Yep. And that's why we're able to charge on the low end, because... I mean, we intend to keep you guys coming back to the well, and you're never going to buy something and it not be. You'll never have to buy a second pack for it to work. But at the same time, we want
you
to buy
two packs. Will give you even cooler stuff.
Yeah, our secret space opera is really our side niche. It's not priority, but like I want to do some Firefly knockoffs. I want to do some Flash
Space Cowboys.
I want to do some Flash Gordon, Ming the Merciless.
Pulp Fiction, not the movie.
Save the universe.
Right.
Pulp sci-fi.
Stuff.
Do some of the the Buck Rogers stuff based off the actual.
You bet.
Yeah.
You bet.
Yeah, I got a mini. My friend Mark's doing. It's just sort of a vanity piece for myself, but it's a post-apocalyptic figure. It's a guy with a fire axe and a gas mask and a cape and stuff.
Fallout.
He's kind of Fallout-y, but my friend. There's a concept art for him on my website.
The one with the gas mask.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The really dark looking.
It's for a comic my friend has been drawing forever that he's never published, but I'm going to put it in my. My space opera line is a post-apocalyptic nomad desert warrior like ice pirates or something.
And it's based off of a character in that comic book that Damascus drew, wrote some.
He wrote all of it.
Or did he? Okay, so he wrote it and drew it when he was in high school, and now he's in the process of going back and redoing it. Damascus has actually been published in Heavy Metal.
Yeah, twice.
Twice.
Heavy Metal.
He's had a couple of short strips. I'm telling you, he's a fantastic artist. I had him
He's the one that did the Seductress model.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
That is very well done.
On my personal Facebook, I've got a ton of art he did for my Victorian horror game I ran forever. Mm-hmm.
I've got...
I'd like to do minis for that, but nobody'd buy them.
I call it Cthulhu 1920s and 1890s.
Yeah, we're looking at doing some stuff for that era. Victorian minis.
I have tons of Call of Cthulhu minis, the actual minis from...
Wow.
From...
Raffam?
Raffam.
Yeah.
And they're great minis, but the thing is, they're impossible to get a hold of, one. And two, you get to the actual figures for the people.
Well, I found a bunch of them at Gen Con.
Dude, yeah, they're on Raffam's website. I
did buy some from them that way, and it took almost 6 months before I got them.
Really? I bought a ton of them off there a year or so ago, and they were real fast.
Yeah, if you buy them directly from Chaosium, they don't have the whole lineup there, but the thing is they get them to you real quick.
Noble Knight's where I bought them from.
Oh, yeah. Noble Knight, if you've never...
Noble Knight is awesome. Noble Knight is actually one of our...
We're an affiliate with them.
Yeah,
actually.
One of our affiliates.
Yeah, they've been good to me. Very good, good things to say.
Like, I was looking for that Reaper elephant with a monk spade for a game I ran.
The Tsunami memorial piece, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a big elephant guy. They had him there for like $7.99.
Yeah, I'd love to get more of the Raffam ones, but the thing is the problem I run into is when you get to the actual character minis for like the investigators and stuff, they don't really look anything like what the description for anybody really
has. My game was Victorian horror, so I went everywhere. I went to like Black Tree Designs. I got some of their Doctor Who miniatures.
Yeah, awesome.
Yeah, I customized a Peter Davison, put a scarf on him, and he looks really cool.
Yeah, basically, when we decide to do a line, I mean, we don't do anything half-assed. I mean, it's, one of my personal mantras is anything worth doing is worth overdoing. And we will...
Oh, because gamers in general are going to appreciate that.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and I mean, that's what we're here to do, you know? And so when we get to the point where we make a Victorian line, it'll have customizable heads and things
That'll
like that.
That'll be excellent.
And really...
Sword King or any, Blunderbuss?
For any
Sword
new King. Line...
Buritsu, thank you.
Yeah, for any new line or figure... To be sustainable,
martial arts.
We just need 100 of you out there to buy one. Mm-hmm. And
pretty much, and then it's sustainable. We sell 100 and it's, square.
It's square.
The last minis I had to run around and hunt for were Wild West ones. So.
Oh, man, that took forever.
Wargames Foundry has a ton of them, but you have to pay for Wargames Foundry prices, which is... If they sold single figures, it'd be fantastic.
Mm-hmm. But they sell, my problem is I found some, but they're just... ridiculously expensive because I'm running a Deadlands game.
Deadlands.
I love the Deadlands setting.
You know what's incredible?
I hate the rules.
It's really good when you can shoot with the cards like I can.
I love the setting, hate the rules.
This is interesting because
Savage Worlds has a Deadlands. That's really good.
Savage Worlds system is based off of the Deadlands.
Yeah. Now, I'll be fair. System. I haven't actually looked at Savage Worlds after.
Savage Worlds does pulp really well.
Yes, it does.
I used to actually be a professional game master. There was a group of people that paid me to run games, and it could have been a full-time job if I'd had lower expectations.
It was like $30,000 a year to run D&D.
It wasn't that much, but it was a lot. And one of the things that they did do is I ran a Deadlands game for them, and it was the original neon green Deadlands set. Hell on Earth. Yeah, it was the post-apocalyptic one.
Yeah.
And... like I said, I love the setting. I like how the whole timeline ties in together, but the poker chips just drove me crazy. So.
Oh, that's one of my favorite parts, the bennies.
Oh, yeah. The Deadlands game that I'm running is a game that's been a campaign that's been going on off and on for about 6 years. So, and we're podcasting the whole thing since we started it back up, and we just hit 26 sessions of it.
Wow.
So,
that's 26 sessions since we started it back up. We've been doing it for a year.
Over a year.
That's pretty cool. Yeah,
so. Wow.
I haven't been to all the games because I have medical problems that ever pop up on occasion. But the thing is I do try to make it.
Yeah, my typical session is I try to hit 20 for a campaign usually because I don't like them to go on too incredibly long.
I'm lucky if you sit in under 30.
Well, this is one that started several years ago and then went on hiatus forever, and then I started up again, and then it went on hiatus forever, and so I only have two
of the original players.
Three of the original players.
Three of the original players, two original characters.
I build my campaign so like a TV series season, season
episodic.
One is is this, I'll do like 20 sessions and then we'll do
it.
Well,
this is just one of those things where I came up with the idea of it and had the story all scripted out, and I'm just like, I just want to finish it now. So I'm like, I did all the work on this.
The thing that happened was the whole players being able to make it just fell apart. A lot of us moved.
I moved to Kansas City. A lot of them stayed in Lawrence.
Very fortunate.
Several of them stayed in Lawrence. The rest of us moved to Kansas City, too.
I'm very fortunate with my gaming group. I'm 35, and I'm the youngest of the group. And I've had the same group now for over 10 years.
They're a bunch of Tolkien Rush fans, so that's,
They're not all Rush fans.
What's wrong with Rush?
I'm not saying there is. I'm just saying Rush Fan is like its own thing.
They're a different breed.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I'm very fortunate to have had the same group for technically for 10 years. Band. And it's, you know, I like, for my campaign, we try to put like 30 sessions a year is mm-hmm. what we go. And like the campaign I just started, it'll probably run 5 or 6 years.
Yeah,
you know, we it'll definitely go epic.
We try to game every other weekend. The average game campaign usually lasts what, a year to a year and a half, usually 18
something like
months.
That, yeah, so, we started podcasting the actual play sessions
about
a year and a half ago, and it's our most popular thing.
That's about the same. But that could be interesting. I do one a week for 6 months typically for a campaign. So. Yeah.
One a week for 6 months, that's a lot of campaign. That's a lot of games.
You get a lot in, yeah. 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 And every game I run doesn't last 5 years. Just I'll do several 1 to 2 year runs, and then we'll do an epic.
Mm-hmm. But I was amazed to find the amount of how very few Wild West minis there are out there for a reasonable price anymore.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't surprise me.
It's a very... It's
they don't make Deadlands minis anymore.
It's a niche product inside of a niche product.
Oh yeah, Deadlands is you can't get much more niche than that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, my all-time favorite Wild West game is Boot Hill,
mm-hmm.
or the version of Boot Hill that I've ever played, which, as I understand it, is a highly customized version. We don't even have a rule book for it. It's whatever we type, and mm-hmm. we'll change the rules mid-stride to make them better. And my friend David runs it, and his uncle, I think, ran it before that, and. Fantastic game, but you're right. Finding miniatures for that game was difficult as all get out.
I think it'll become a little bit more easy to do, or a little bit easier to do moving forward. There's several Western role-playing games out there now. There's Aces and Eights.
Have you played that?
I saw the book.
No, we have not. I wanted to pick a copy of it up. Yeah. We went to Gen Con. The last year we went to Gen Con, but the only book they had left was the leather-bound hard copy edition, and it was like $85. And I was just like, you know, I can't really justify spending that much for it.
Yeah.
Especially on a system that I don't know anything about.
The older I get, the less likely I am to take a chance on spending $80 on something that
Don't get me wrong, the artwork in it was gorgeous. It had, you know, full double-page layouts of beautiful Western paintings, like mm-hmm. legitimate paintings.
Mm-hmm.
Gorgeous layout, but I just... I look at it and I go, I don't know anything about the system.
Yeah.
I couldn't get in any games to try it. I was like, there's no knowing what the system there is. Was, $80 is a big hit.
There was a D20 one. Sidewinder, maybe?
Yeah, Sidewinder and Sidewinder Recoiled.
Yeah, those... It wasn't too bad. I remember reading it thinking,
about the PDF
I would play this.
Somewhere.
Yeah, the potential for Westerns to make great role-playing games is there. The thing is what can muck it up is...
Pulp genre, you can have samurai, you can have cowboys.
Yeah, pulp stuff. Pulp stuff's really having a comeback lately.
Yeah. Hollow Earth series.
That's a cool book.
I just finished an interview last week with Sean Preston over at Reality Blurs.
Mm-hmm.
And they're working on a setting called Iron Dynasty, which is like steampunk samurai.
I love it.
I advocate that.
And it sounds really cool.
It has my stamp of approval.
I'm not going to do minis on it just yet, but... It's the steampunk thing. I'm just steampunk. Yay!
Well, steampunk samurai was like, really?
Oh
the
yeah.
The difficult thing with steampunk, I would think for miniatures, would be the fact of the customizability of like what the characters would dress with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I could see that being
Just use Victorian dress, and then add you know like a pneumatic arm.
Well, not just things like that, but like one of my brother's friends. You can blank his name out. His name's Hans. He does actual. He like creates steampunk type stuff for like wear. Like
I've seen
literal
I've
legitimate
looked at
stuff.
Websites like that.
Yeah,
they exist.
The amount of detail that goes into that thing, into those things, including like the arms and stuff, would just be very difficult to capture on small scale minis. Mm-hmm. I would think.
There's a cool garment store called Gentleman's Emporium.
Yeah,
I got my coat there. It's got some steampunk shenanigans there.
Yeah, they got some great stuff. It's very interesting design work, but I would think that would cause some difficulties, I would think.
Well, it depends on how intricate you want to get. I mean, if you want to do like a pneumatic soldier or something, a 19th century Iron Man.
That would be tough.
It depends on, you can kind of cut corners in some places, I guess. It depends on the sculptor, really.
Yeah.
And it depends on how true to scale you care about. I mean, you can do a lot just by buying Privateer Press stuff.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
You know, they've got a great line for their Steamjack games.
Yeah.
War Machine.
Warjacks.
Yeah. Warjacks, that's what it is. Yeah.
There's War Machine and Warjacks.
Warjacks are the robots.
Yeah. It's,
machines and mecha, whatever.
Yeah, I've bought
Iron Kingdoms line.
Yeah, Iron Kingdoms, thank you. Yeah, I've bought I've bought many of their figures to use for my game, for my D&D game, and I just for customization, you know, mm-hmm. for mods and bits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you guys aim to basically do that stuff with the customization thing with Secret Skeleton.
We love to customize figs, and if you like to customize figs, you'll have fun with our figs.
Yeah, our guys are smaller than like Reaper, but we're like Rael Partha and Grenadier is what I mostly have. I have a lot of Reaper critters, but their PCs are kind of big for my taste. They're beautiful.
28 millimeter. They're 28 millimeter standard, which means they have no size definition.
Yeah, exactly. Because exactly. 28 millimeter is not by default a scale because there's no reference to anything. Yeah. It's just a number.
But the thing is when you look at it, when things are 28 millimeters, everybody's the same height.
Well, that's what like when Grenadier and Rael Partha did it is 25 millimeter generally meant they're 25 millimeters tall.
Yeah, they were 5 feet tall.
Yeah.
Roughly, it was like 1 inch to 1 inch.
Yeah, and that's what I'm doing, but I'm paying a lot more attention to it.
Yeah.
Is 5 feet.
Yeah, Reaper does great work. I mean, they're mm-hmm. an industry giant for a reason. They do great work. It's just not necessarily our bag of tea or cup of tea, bag of bones, whatever you want to say.
I love Reaper minis, but the thing is I would like something a little bit more accurate.
Yeah, that's part of it. It's like we're doing slaughter bases because I'm just tired of sawing guys off their bases to customize them.
Well, that's
you get like
a
big base and it's 30 millimeters wide and you're having to squeeze them in on the combat grid.
We've all had to try to put those Games Workshop skeletons on their bases.
Disintegrating
into tiny pieces.
Yeah, that's what the slaughter bases. I mean, that was what broke the camel's back for me was I bought this Bugbear fig that I love the fig. And that was the fig I wanted, and it was, again, the size was largely relevant until I went to base it, and I had to use a quote-unquote large base.
40 millimeter?
Yeah, because he came with a tree stump attached to his foot and all this stuff, and it's like, well, that kind of bummed me out because...
Because, 40 millimeter base is like 10-foot face.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is no good.
Well, in AD&D, they were large.
Well, yeah, but did they have a 10-foot face?
They didn't have facing at all,
They were large, but I think they wouldn't take up that much space.
Well,
they were still human.
Well, AD&D large really didn't until you had a
large
battle system.
Large started at 7 feet tall in AD&D. Yeah.
Did it really?
Gnolls were large.
You could have people that were almost 7 foot tall in that.
Shaquille O'Neal, 10 foot reach, man.
Yeah.
Damn.
I wouldn't mess with him.
No.
Not unless I had a pole arm.
Well, we played Shaq Fu.
Well, looking at wrapping this up here shortly. Just a few more questions. Is there any significance behind the name, Secret Skeleton?
Sounds awesome.
Yep.
That is very specifically it.
We like the alliteration.
Somewhat later, I came up with it kind of sounds like a 1E module or something.
Mm-hmm.
Like Tomb of the Secret Skeleton or something.
Yeah, but the truth of the matter is he called me up one night and I was like, how about this, Secret Skeleton? I went, all right.
Sold.
Yeah, whatever.
Sounds cool. That's
we just like it.
But what do you guys have on the horizon that we should all be getting excited about?
Well,
that you can talk about. Really.
Well, we're not under any disclosure shenanigans because we're the disclosees.
You are the company, yes.
Yes. Apparatus Aqualish probably next year.
Sweet.
Or an apparati.
Apparati, a giant underwater crab droid submarine.
A barrel machine with attachments on a sprue.
Of course, Mr. Boulay, big land shark. He's actually I average out the size, so he's like 9 feet tall. So he's like,
good lord.
It'll be a good size.
It'll be an awesome size mini.
He's a paperweight.
Yeah, he's gonna be on my desk.
What a paperweight.
Jason Weave did the dragon turtle for Reaper. They're about the same size. Boulay's probably a little bit bigger.
He's the one that did
really?
The dragon turtle.
Because the dragon turtle is huge.
It looks like it could be Bowser almost. You could buy it to make it Bowser. Yeah.
Yeah, the thing is massive.
PC range, our ranges are the Frogmen, the Dark Elves, the Sea Devils, the Skeletons, the Lizardmen we just got started on. They look
I saw
sweet.
Them. They're kind of cool looking so far.
Can we talk about the Lycanthropes?
Sorry. Yeah, Lycanthropes probably next year. We're going to do hybrid and animal forms in a pack for them.
A two pack, and they match.
And it's gonna be like wolf man too.
And they match. You'll be able to buy a fig, and it's like this is my fig, and then
this is his.
And then when he turns,
Krenos form. This is
he'll have some of the same equipment on
and features.
Yes,
it's gonna
That's
be more
awesome.
Wolf man. It's not gonna be white wolf, dog headed, like long snout canine werewolf. It'll be more Michael Landon. Except
Lon Chaney.
Oh, which is awesome.
Okay. Yeah. And but we're gonna do the classic Lycanthropes. Not just Wolfman. We're gonna do Pigman, Wolfman, Tiger Man.
I was thinking armor probably too on the wolf, on the hybrid form, because that's just cool.
One of the things we want to do on the were-swine, if you will, is they'll be in a nice big pot belly stove, almost plate armor that's oversized and obviously loose fitting on the human fig. Mm-hmm. And then when they're turned, it's nice and tight.
Oh, nice.
That's cool.
Well, they're designed to be PC.
PC variants?
Yeah, PCs.
If you want to, but.
Or. Yeah. You know, but still, there's a lot of lycanthropes. We're not trying to do the same thing everybody else has done, so I figured we'd do some lycanthropes that are specifically geared towards player characters.
That's awesome.
And, you know, hey, yeah, if you want to buy them and use them for fishing sinkers, I don't care.
as long as you
use them for whatever you want. Yeah, just, yeah, pay for them.
Yeah, pay for them.
It's like one of my favorite disclaimers in a gaming book of all time was in the old Bureau 13 Stalking the Night Fantastic book. They're like, hey, if you're against role-playing games, we will give you a bulk discount if you want to buy our books and burn them. You know, they were all about, hey, yeah, you want to have a book burning? Sure. Yeah, we'll give you a discount. Buy as many as you want.
That's still profit for us.
Don't yes, money. Exactly.
Your money is still green, so we don't care. when was the last time you guys had a chance to sit down and play something?
Tuesday.
Sunday.
Tuesday and Sunday. What did you guys play?
I played Basic.
I ran my Pathfinder game.
Nice. I've been running out of the Rule Cyclopedia. We ran 3-5 for a while, but I got an unrepentant power gamer in my group, and he's got Asperger's, so that's like that he can win D&D.
This kid was genetically engineered to win Dungeons and Dragons. It's insane.
He's freakishly good. Anyhow, so I got tired of the save versus dungeon master shenanigans, so I subscribed to Castles and Crusades, which is an awesome system. The books are inexpensive, and other than a lot of editing errors, which are fun to find, it's a great way to immunize players off of 3.5.
It is. It really
and
is.
And then I ran a couple campaigns using that, and I think it's like methadone for 3rd edition.
No, it sounds funny, like we're making fun, but no, because I...
Yeah, it's very hard to move away from 3.5.
I'm a total 3.5 missionary. You know, I will, you know, go into Kenya with nothing but books and play this game. You know, that's how I was. And we just kind of ran into a hiatus in my normal game that I was running. I went down to Wes's one day. I was like, hey, why don't you play this with us? And I'm like, all right, it's not D&D. You know, and I sat down and I'll be damned if I didn't have fun.
Mm-hmm.
And for me to have fun in a game is hard because I've been DMing for 20 years, you know, and it's just...
So you find all the flaws.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not the type of DM that tells people no either. I always find out, you know, another way to...
Plus, I'm a total glory-seeking attention hog as a player. I'm the worst kind of player. And then it's my kid brother's game, so I'm sure all the other players are rolling their eyes dreading me to enter their game. But that the Castles and Crusades, man, it rules light, and it was a blast. It was an absolute blast. I loved it.
Might have to check that one out.
I've
heard of it.
Yeah, both of the books, like the Player's Handbook and the Monsters and Treasure Book, totaled are like $45.
That's not bad.
And actually, you can buy a flip book off their website for $25. Yeah. That's both of them.
Might just be
flip
something it. I'll check out.
Yeah,
ooh, that's cool.
Yeah, it's not 4th edition pretty, but so.
But it's functional.
Yeah, it's fun. And it's worth it.
My whole feeling on 4th edition is 4th edition isn't exactly that pretty for most of the artwork.
The layouts in the books are beautiful.
The layouts good are good, layouts. But the artwork, I look at the artwork and I go.
I'm not the biggest Wayne Reynolds fan, but
whereas I am, I love Wayne Reynolds.
The artwork in Pathfinder
is nice.
Not bad.
When I met him, he was kind of a jerk, but you know.
Now see, I met him and he was super friendly. I
must have hit him on a bad day.
You must have.
That's I hear
or
the
I
same.
Hit him on a good one.
Yeah,
I actually own. I
could be bipolar.
I actually own a couple of originals.
I've had people say the same thing about Gary Gygax too. I met Gary Gygax. I talked with him every year that I went up to Gen Con. Up until probably 2004, when he quit. It wasn't 2004. It was when the last year they had it in Wisconsin, and he was always just the nicest person I ever talked to. Everybody else is like, he's an absolute dickhead, and I'm like, he was really nice to me. He gave me tips and hints and signed a bunch of stuff for me. Let me take my picture with him. I've got a picture with Gary Gygax, the progenitor of D&D.
No, that's awesome. And I wish I had that same year, as a matter of fact. The last year we were in Wisconsin, I had the opportunity to run into him, and I wish I had taken advantage of the moment in retrospect. But it was like my second day on the floor, and my feet were killing me.
You were tired.
And he was just sitting on this chair. He was sitting in this chair in one of the abandoned booths that tend to pop up on day two and day three.
Yeah.
And I just kind of sat down and I looked over and I went, hey, you're Gary Gygax. And he went, yeah. And I sat there in complete stunned silence for a minute. And I was like, well, thanks. And that was the total extent of our interaction, you know. And he's like, you're welcome. And that was it. And I wish I had, you know, in retrospect, you know, got a, something signed or got a dice rub off of him or give him some whoopee or I don't know, something, you know.
One of my older friends, he's been going to Gen Con since, like, I think the third or fourth year, back when it was still on Lake Geneva.
Mm-hmm.
And he's known Gary Gygax and Dave Arneson since that time. And, you know, every year he was who I used to go up there with before I met Ethan. And every year he was who I went up with. And every year we'd go chat with Gary Gygax for a good hour or two and just find out how things are going over the year. You know, just knew him like he was friends with him for his whole life.
Cool.
It was just one of those cool things. So
I'm saying with Ted Koppel.
Huh?
That's a lie.
Ted, I don't want to say his last name, but Ted, he's been doing gaming D&D since D&D came out. He's still got sealed.
Ted Koppel?
No.
Yes, Ted Koppel.
Yes, Ted Koppel. We'll say Ted Koppel.
Ted Koppel.
But he's still got sealed copies of the original box set for Dungeons and Dragons.
I would.
Setting on a shelf, the white box.
Yeah. Fantastic.
I just look at it and I go, yeah. Well, I'm sure there's a collector somewhere who wants that.
That's called foresight.
Yeah.
He always wanted to make sure he had multiple copies in case anything happened. He had another one he could go
for. Fair enough.
Yeah. He's got the old
Fiend,
Fiend Folio, the old one that's got the Call of Cthulhu gods.
Oh yeah,
Deities and Demigods.
Yeah, he's got like three of those. Just setting on the shelf. I'm looking at going.
You can't call yourself an old school gamer and not have one.
Well, if you ever want to see Elric and Cthulhu fight, there you go.
Yeah, but yeah, no. Gary Gygax was the nicest guy that I've met, pretty much up there that I didn't, you know, I wasn't meeting for an interview.
It sort of brings me to the last point is, you know, one big thing about Gamers Haven is we really try to spread the knowledge of tabletop hobby and sort of the love of the hobby. What is it about tabletop gaming that you guys love?
Battle abstraction. I don't necessarily like, you know, tabletop gaming for the sake of tabletop gaming. Like, I don't like playing a role system where you have to use miniatures.
Mm-hmm.
That's just a contradiction in terms for me. But I like them because they make battle easier to manage. I like facing, which Castles and Crusades uses.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, you know, I like making combat quick and brutal. And with miniatures, that's as close you can get without just...
Actually, you know, beating each other.
BSing it, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
For me... Two reasons. One, very warm and fuzzy, and it comes from moving a lot as a kid. You know, it didn't matter whether we lived in Fairbanks, Alaska, or, you know, Devil's Elbow, Nebraska, or wherever, you know. D&D was the same game, and gamers are gamers the world over, and you know, you look for a mass of black t-shirts, and you have something in common, and it was easy to make friends. Secondly, my favorite thing about it, I'm 35 years old, and I get to play with toys.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's really what it boils down to. I still get to play with my action figures. And have fun.
And people don't look down on you for it.
Well, I'm sure they do.
At this point, I don't care if they look down.
No.
Well, yeah,
I'm already married.
Yeah,
I win.
Whatever.
You know, I'm 30 years old.
I don't care.
You know, I'm married. I got kids now.
I stopped caring.
I've already won the contest as far as I'm concerned. You look down on me. Go ahead.
I don't really care what other people think, but I can say this. I really looked out because I'm married and my wife games with me.
Yeah, my wife doesn't game with me, but it's probably for the better because she's a Texas Hold'em fan.
Oh boy!
And she's good, so it's probably better that we don't game.
Yeah, my wife doesn't do the gaming either. I think it gives her nightmares.
But she paints well.
She paints fantastically. Put some of her stuff up on my Facebook page.
We'll have to check that out. Yeah.
Actually, we're going to get together a bunch of if you go to a tabletop, there's a bunch of her minis in a case like Spider Queen from Reaper, and
yes,
those are all hers.
Oh, those are all hers.
All that little area there is all one she's painted.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah. And she's been painting how many years?
Like two.
Holy cow. It's like my wife.
That's disgusting.
It's like,
it is.
I paint and my figures look horrible, and my wife's like, oh, I'm just going to do a kind of light color scheme here. I'm looking at it going.
Yeah. With school and everything for me,
she paints on occasion.
Wesley's wife did a freehand holy symbol of Ouijas on a buckled cape.
Arithnal.
Arithnal, I'm sorry. But yeah, freehand.
Keep in mind, she can draw on an extra sketch.
Yeah, like pictures with dimensions.
Some people you just have to envy.
Yeah, because, and she's only been doing it 2 years, and she just keeps getting better. It's insane. It really is.
I've heard that women are usually better painters than men are because they have better control over the paintbrushes. And between my wife and I, it's very obvious that she has much better control over the paintbrush than I do.
Uh-huh.
And she just gets those little bitty areas, you just get them filled in just perfect, and I'm like, it's done.
Yeah. Yeah, the way I paint is I prime it white, dip it in an ink of flavor, and hope for the best, or just give
I'm
it to
I'm not bad at painting.
Neither am I. I get by, but...
I got a quick shade now that's...
That stuff is awesome. Quick shade, yeah.
I advocate
that. I wanted to try that stuff. I've heard good things about it.
Oh, that stuff works great for your armies. Skeletons.
If you're painting a lot of figs, it's worth
anything.
Dollar.
Works well with it. I was running a desert-themed game a couple years ago, and I bought, 40 or 50 of the cam scene from Reaper's Warlord for it. And, assembly line, paint them, just one color at a time on, 40 guys, then just dip, done.
Yeah. They actually...
Nice.
I don't remember who it was. Someone up there at Tabletop took the lid, the lid that goes for the dip, and then just used sticky tack and stuck the figures to the lid and just went... Shook it.
That's not a bad idea.
Pull it off. I've taken the figures off, let them dry.
I've taken it to brushing it on, actually, now, but...
Yeah.
Well, that gives you even a better effect, from what I understand. But the thing is, it's just really cool. You can go, and I have this big, cute, because it's a big container, because it's designed for you to dip in. You just take the lid off, use blue tack, stick the guys to the bottom of the lid, and go, shake it a little bit.
It works.
Dry them off, set them off to the side. It's like, that's really cool.
I heartily recommend it.
A lot of people told me to check it out.
Yeah, it works great for doing skeletons, because, you do the basic
anything
coat for the
anything
white
earth
for the skeletons, and just...
Anything with light colors, it turns out really good, especially tans and flesh tones and whatnot. It looks pretty good. You got to kind of nurse it a bit if you dip it, make sure it doesn't coagulate. But yeah, it's good stuff.
Yeah. My wife doesn't do shadowing or shading or anything like that, but yeah, she loves to paint.
My wife is actually an absolute fiend with that stuff, man. She paints the shadows herself.
Yeah. I can't do that.
Yeah, just look at my Facebook. It's on my photos. I got a painted miniatures gallery on there.
It's all
Mega Mini sells the Grenadier Julie Guthrie line, which are some of my favorite miniatures ever made. And I buy the crap out of them. But yeah, that's where most of them came from.
All right. Well, I want to thank you guys for taking the time out to come to our multi-billion-dollar studio here.
Fantastic! Love the green room.
Oh, yes. Well, it's catered by the finest restaurants.
Fruit Basket was lovely. Thank you.
But I wanted to thank you guys for coming out here and talking with us. It was
it was very nice.
Very cool. And we look forward to seeing your stuff, and especially look forward to seeing you guys at CantCon.
Can't wait to see the minis.
We have an exclusive actually for CantCon.
Oh yeah,
it's the Invisible Stalker. I'm not crapping. It's like a base with feet on it. It's free, though.
Hey, that's awesome. Easy to paint.
Yeah, I know. It'd be a nice invisible PC tally, but yeah, it's a...
This is actually my wife's first mini. She liked it.
You paying attention now?
Yes.
All right. Hello and welcome to the Red Phone Zone, where we don't know what we're talking
about. Hey, we do know what we're talking about. We called the whole Hugo Weaving Red Skull thing, remember?
Oh, right. Fine. Where was it? The Red Phone Zone, where we talk about all kinds of gaggles.
Aaron, could you cut it with the gaggles thing? It's not working for me.
All right. Fine. The Red Phone Zone, where we talk about movies, comics, video games. Hey,
don't forget that we talk about, Bruce Campbell and Christopher Lee, obviously.
Natalie Portman.
All right, guys! I'm trying to do a commercial for the Red Phone Zone, where we talk about movies, comics, video games, tabletop gaming, all kinds of other geek stuff.
You mean that show we broadcast on Ustream?
Yes!
Wednesday, 8 Central Standard Time.
Right, at redphonezone.com. Now, can you guys just give me a minute to get this promo done?
Sure. Sorry, dude.
Yeah.
All right, from the top. Hello and welcome to the Red Phone Zone.
Aaron, we need a tiebreaker. Okay, who would win in a fight with Galactus?
Anti-Monitor.
Galactus and Anti-Monitor. Come on.
I think the more important question would be who would win in a fight between me and you two idiots.
Well, I guess we don't know what we're talking about.
Been listening to the Gamers Haven Podcast. Subscribe to the show by visiting our website at gamershavenpodcast.com, where you can also discuss all things gaming in our forum, drop us an email, or just peruse our episode archives.
You can also call us toll-free and leave a message to be played on the show by dialing 1-877-416-1270. That's toll-free, 877-416-1270. On our website, you'll also find our actual play podcasts chronicling our misadventures through all things role-playing. Enjoy what you hear? Why not support the Gamers Haven by purchasing Gamers Haven merchandise, visiting our affiliates, or just by clicking on our donate button? The Gamers Haven podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial, Share Alike 3.0 United States license, some rights reserved. Some music in this podcast is used with permission of Joe Hero Band at joehero.com. This is a Thousand Monkeys production.
This concludes the broadcast from World Control.